world's leading economies meet today in Europe.
The talk, of course, is about Greece, but there are problems brewing in Italy, too.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. Today is Wednesday, the second day of November.
Coming up, there were fewer layoffs announced last month, but does that mean more hiring?
American kids are doing better at arithmetic, not so much the reading and the writing, though.
And later, a German woman wanted a bag of cold cuts from the butcher. She got a bag of money instead. How did she handle that situation?
I can't wait to find out, Steve. Those stories ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Carbonite Business, providing automatic online backup solutions for small businesses and the computer files they depend on. Learn more and receive a free trial at Carbonite.com with code Marketplace.
We're going to start today with a Marketplace global perspective because so much is happening in Europe these days. And there's a little summit, Jeremy, going on in France starting today called the G20.
Yeah, Germany's finance minister said today Greece should stick to the original European rescue plan and avoid the prospect of a referendum that could throw the bailout into doubt. That on the day that finance ministers and leaders from the world's 20 biggest economies are in Cannes, France, talking not about films, but about the global economy.
Certainly not. David Shore is Foreign Policy Program Officer with the Stanley Foundation, and he is with us now from France. Hey, David.
Good morning.
So Greece, of course, dominating the headlines at the meeting, too?
The Greek referendum is just the latest wrinkle into a situation that already had a huge amount of uncertainty. But the bottom line question is, the Europeans going to be able to handle this themselves, or are they going to need help? Aside from which way Greece goes, you know, there's this question of how the resources to build this firewall add up.
A new plan for a referendum in Greece. I know last week's big European deal was supposed to be the solution to the debt problems. How does this new flare-up, this referendum called, change the agenda?
I think they'll still run through the longer-term agenda items that they'd planned on, but a lot of the attention is going to have to deal with the Eurozone debt crisis and an effective response because, of course, the global financial markets are watching.
David Shore with the Stanley Foundation joining us from Cannes. David, thank you.
Thank you very much.
The big news that Greece is planning a referendum tanked global markets yesterday and sent borrowing costs higher across Europe. That is a particular problem in Italy, where finance officials are holding an emergency meeting today to figure out what to do. Italy's economy, Steve, is, of course, six times the size of Greece's.
Yeah, its population, too.
That's right. Reporter Megan Williams is in Rome for us with the latest now on that. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, we've been focused on Greece, but there's a big meeting today in Italy. Italy's got its own problems. Bring us up to date.
Well, Italy has its own huge problems. As you probably know, the interest rates on Italian bonds have risen to above 6%, which is, 6% for a long time has been considered the point of no return. Italy has a huge debt, 120% of its GDP, and if it just won't be able to repay that debt if interest rates keep as high as they are right now on the sovereign bonds. But now there's huge panic in the country that it could go under if government reforms aren't pushed through very quickly.
And we always think of Italy in the terms of the European debt crisis as one that's a little better off than Greece or Portugal or Spain, countries like that. Is that still the case?
Well, it is the case in terms of personal finances. Italians have a lot of savings. They don't have mortgages for the most part. A lot of Italians own outright their homes. So there's not much personal debt. And the other thing is, a lot of the Italian economy is still under the table. A lot of people aren't paying taxes. A lot of people are working illegally. So there's not a big enough tax base. And it makes for a very, very wobbly government finances, which is why Italy has become the target of speculators.
Reporter Megan Williams in Rome. Thanks, Megan.
Thanks.
The payroll processing company ADP said today private sector employers hired more than 100,000 folks in October, Jeremy. That report just ahead of the big Labor Department report that comes out on Friday.
Right, the one that will tell us what the new unemployment rate is and how many people got jobs last month. Well, there's also word today that U.S. employers announced about 42,000 job cuts last month, which, of course, job cuts are bad, but that was the lowest of the numbers that we've seen from this survey since June. The survey comes from the job placement company Challenger, Gray, and Christmas. But what does that mean for the job picture in this country? For that, let's bring in CEO John Challenger. He is with us from Chicago. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So, John, could it be that companies have just the right amount of employees now, that they're not doing many layoffs, but they're not really hiring either?
Well, that has been the story for much of the last 2 years. Layoffs have not been heavy since the recession ended, other than periodic outbursts, but the job creation has been missing.
What about what's happening in Europe? We've got yesterday's news about this Greek referendum, and today the news that Italy's borrowing costs have risen above the critical 6% threshold. How is all that going to affect the job picture here in the U.S. going forward?
Well, certainly in terms of job creation, there's some risk there. Europe's a big market for U.S. employers, and when it's in this kind of bad economic shape, that makes it difficult for U.S. companies to grow in those markets and add jobs.
You've watched your numbers on layoffs go up and down and up and down over the last couple of years. What are you expecting in the next several months?
Well, I'm happy to see these numbers today because we've had 3 months where the layoffs seemed to be rising. The economy was getting worse. But now all of a sudden, GDP is getting better. We've seen personal consumption grow in the last quarter by almost 2%. That's a good sign for retail jobs coming up this holiday season.
John Challenger, CEO of Challenger, Gray, and Christmas. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Today in the San Francisco Bay Area, auctioneers will be selling off many of the assets of now defunct solar panel maker Solyndra. That's the company that got a $500 million federal loan guarantee, Jeremy. You remember that when they went belly up? Well, Marketplace business correspondent Bob Moon reports now on what kind of effect that high-profile failure will have on other alternative energy companies.
It's a tricky moment for an industry that had just been showing signs of life.
I worry that the federal government could very well pull back in terms of funding, political support.
Dan Riker is an energy policy expert at Stanford University. He says belt tightening and partisan fighting were already threatening federal research and development help even before the industry's recent failures. But this might end up attracting private investors, so says Thomas Maslin, an emerging energy analyst at IHS.
Some of them may see the current struggles of the market as an opportunity to gobble up some relatively cheap assets.
Maslin says smaller startups still depend on federal help, though, and President Obama has warned the U.S. risks falling behind.
Other countries are putting enormous subsidies into these companies.
Stanford's Dan Riker says America can't afford to surrender its current lead in R&D funding.
We could very well lose the race to tap into that market and all the jobs that come with it if we don't do for these emerging technologies what for decades we've done for the more traditional technologies.
Riker points out fossil fuels continue to receive billions more in subsidies. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Carbonite Business. Carbonite Business is an online automatic backup solution designed specifically for small businesses. Carbonite Business automatically and continually backs up computer files to a secure offsite location. In the event of a hard drive crash, virus, or other computer problem, files can easily be recovered. To learn more about Carbonite Business and to receive a free trial, visit Carbonite.com and use the code Marketplace.
Now to some gauges and surveys that are giving us a better idea of what the economy looks like now and what it may look like in the future.
First, a government study out today called the Nation's Report Card. It says younger students in this country are doing better at math. And that could mean better things for the job market or maybe some other things economically down the road. Marketplace's Eve Troeh is with us in our L.A. studio with the latest on that. Hey, Eve.
Hi.
We hear all the time how bad U.S. test scores are. Are these numbers encouraging?
Well, they're not discouraging is a better way to say it. So test scores overall in this measure have risen steadily, like one little percentage point at a time for about 20 years. But given all the money and classroom time we've poured into testing, a lot of people would like to see some home runs here, not just singles. Mm. And then you can think of it this way, though. No strikeouts, no dip in the scores, even though public schools are handling more children in poverty and more children from immigrant families.
All right. But what are the consequences and what consequences do these scores have for the economy?
That depends on which economy you mean. Yeah. The scores did show an achievement gap, with white and Asian students doing a lot better than other groups. And for those students on the bottom, that affects how they're going to live in this economy, whether they get good jobs, move up. And on the international stage, it's hard to say. The U.S. is in the middle of the pack compared to other wealthy nations. I talked to Gary Burtless at the Brookings Institution, and he said, you know, despite being a bit embarrassing on these test scores, so far they haven't hurt our economy.
And we just don't know whether it's the performance of sort of the average youngsters in school, or whether it's the performance of the superlatively talented youngsters in school that makes a bigger difference.
He says, you know, think of Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. You don't need 100 Steve Jobs. You just need one every few years. And our educational system has been providing that.
All right. Marketplace's Eve Troe here in the studio. Eve, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, from children to adults. Now to a study done by the BBC World Service. They talked to adults in more than 24 countries around the world about their economic attitudes. The BBC's Andrew Walker has details.
The recovery from the recent global recession has often been described as unbalanced, strong in the emerging economies, sluggish in the rich world. That is certainly reflected in this poll commissioned by the BBC. Fewer than 10% of people in Japan, France and Britain are hopeful for the near future. But in the developing world, optimists outnumbered pessimists in nearly every country surveyed. In Nigeria, more than 70% expect good times ahead. Justin Urquhart-Stewart of Seven Investment Management is not surprised by the poll's results.
And what you've had in the major Western world is a huge lack of confidence throughout the Eurozone and to a great extent in the States as well. But of course, that doesn't mean the whole world's doing badly, because half the world's actually doing really rather well.
Things in the rich countries may now be even worse than the poll suggests. The research was done between July and September of this year. Since then, the situation in Greece has deteriorated further, and few expect it to get much better soon. In London, I'm the BBC's Andrew Walker for Marketplace.
One last gauge now. Today, the United Nations releases the Human Development Index, which is a new measure showing how people are really doing economically on the planet. The U.S. is not number one there. Of course, it is the world's biggest economy and ranks at the top of GDP and all those things. But Marketplace's David Brancaccio tracks different ways to gauge economic health with his Economy 4.0 series, and he's with us now. Good morning, David.
Morning, Steve.
So the U.N.'s Human Development Index?
Yeah, it starts with a family's income, then looks at a health indicator, life expectancy at birth, then factors in years of education. If you look at it this way, the United States does okay, number four in the world behind the usual suspects. Care to guess, Steve, who the usual suspects are?
One of the Scandinavian countries, I would imagine, right? They're always tops on those lists.
Yeah, you got it right. Norway is number one. We're behind Australia, Netherlands, and Norway. But here's the thing. The Human Development Index report also has a section factoring in the gap between rich and poor within the countries. Here's Bill Orme of the UN's Development Program.
It's quite striking that the United States, of the advanced industrial countries, the one that is most radically affected by an inequality adjustment. That is to say, it drops 19 spots.
19 spots, bringing us down to number 23 in the world.
But isn't growing income inequality, you know, the way things are going right now, the way the world?
Well, there are countries making progress here. Today's figures show that some emerging market countries, Brazil, Chile, Argentina, are actually reducing their income gaps.
Emerging markets, but what about the poorest countries, though?
The Human Development Index data has some good news there. If current trends continue, health, education, income, by mid-century, by 2050, the majority of countries on the planet will be doing as well then as the top 25% countries are doing now.
If trends continue, what does that mean?
Well, you just saw right through me, Steve. The UN says current trends are very unlikely to continue because of climate change. Deforestation, rising sea levels would hit the poorest countries especially hard. But the report says that countries that do have high standards of living, do rank high in this Human Development Index, can still do something about the carbon dioxide linked to climate change. They point to Denmark that's making a lot of strides in that area.
Marketplace's David Brancaccio with our Economy 4.0. David, thank you.
You're welcome.
In Washington today, a bipartisan group of senators is expected to unveil legislation to save the U.S. Postal Service. Not a lot of details yet, but anything would be better than failure for the post office, which is considering some drastic measures to make ends meet, including the closure of some 3,700 post offices across the country. As David Nogueras of Oregon Public Broadcasting reports, that would have a big effect on rural towns.
Homesteaders settled the small landmark town of Fort Rock in central Oregon's high desert in 1905. Jack Swisher, president of the Fort Rock Valley Historical Society, says the town post office opened in 1908. A man named Thomas Roten applied to be Fort Rock's first postmaster.
That put us on the map. He was approved for that. So from March 9th, 1908, to the present time, we've had a post office here.
But many are now worried Fort Rock's only post office might soon be relegated to the history books.
I need stamps, please.
Stamps, okay.
Sherry Blackman says with only a general store, a family restaurant, and a tavern in Fort Rock, closing the post office would be a big deal.
I think it'll have a heck of an impact on our area because, as you can tell, we only have three things in town.
Blackman says she's worried about how she'll get her mail each day. Door-to-door delivery isn't available for everybody out here, and the nearest post office to Fort Rock is more than 30 miles away. Out in the parking lot, Paul Bowers recoils at the mention of a possible closure.
And this is not only a post office. This is where all the farmers' wives come and have a meeting house every day whenever the mail comes in. I mean, this might be the heart and soul of the whole community.
The post office is quick to point out that just making the list doesn't guarantee closure. The Postal Service will look at each office individually to determine if it can provide adequate service without an actual facility. Jack Swisher of the Historical Society says this is about more than just delivering mail and magazines. He says some business owners here are already looking to sell. Should the post office close, he says, it would rip a hole in the town's social fabric.
I think we're going to lose the town. If we lose the post office, we've lost something big.
The post office says closures could come as early as this December. In Bend, Oregon, I'm David Nogueras for Marketplace.
Well, in the UK, Steve, the Postal Service has decided not to deliver to a rural area because the roads to get there are in bad shape. But as the Telegraph reports today, that is not the half of it when it comes to the difficulty of delivering mail.
Right.
Last November, a postal worker wouldn't go to one address because the garden was overgrown.
What?
And at another address, the Royal Mail threatened to cancel service if the owner didn't take steps to control his aggressive cat.
Aggressive cat. I thought it was the dogs that the post guy was...
You got to be careful of old Fluffy.
What does an aggressive
really
cat
aggressive.
Do, though? Like swipe at you with his claws. Yeah, that's not nice.
People love their pets, and they love spending money on them. Just this past Halloween, Steve, Americans were expected to spend more than $300 million on Halloween
costumes
for their pets.
Costumes
this is just for their pets.
Wow.
Now, that's according to the National Retail Federation.
I didn't dress my pet up, Jared. Of course, I don't have a pet, but I did grow up with a lot of pets when I was certainly when
did
I was
did you
younger.
Dress them up when you were
no,
a small
never,
child?
Never did that. No, we didn't do that. We'd have to clean up after them, but not dress them up.
No. All right. Well, in today's Midday Extra, we are going to find out why people are spending so much more on their pets, even during a downturn. Wall Street Journal reporter Wendy Bounds is with us from New York with more on this. Hi, Wendy.
Hey, Steve. Hey, Jeremy. I have to confess, I did put a Halloween scarf on my dog.
So you're biased. It's good that you got that out of the way, yes.
Right. I could not come out with that right
full
out of the
disclosure
gate.
Right
full disclosure.
Full disclosure.
Exactly.
All right. Well, where is all of this increased spending coming from, and how much of an increase is it?
Look, it's pretty much across the board, but we took a hard look today at one of the big drivers, which is actually healthcare costs. And healthcare costs have just skyrocketed for people. People going to vet are like having sticker shock. And over the last 10 years, they've risen more than they have in the past 30 years. A couple of reasons for that. I mean, human healthcare, we have more MRIs, we have CAT scans, we have ultrasounds. All of that has made its way over into the pet care field. So we have more things on the health side that we can spend on. And we let's face it, we treat our pets like members of the family now. They aren't working animals anymore, so we're sort of willing to go that extra length. But you're also seeing it just across the board in other categories. I mean, people spending on organic food for their pets. Last winter, I wrote a piece about people spending hundreds of dollars on apparel, coats, faux mink coats for their pets, treadmills, you
name
it.
That is a weird thing to do. Yeah, put a
faux
mink
fur on an animal that has fur.
Well, because if you put real fur from like another animal, that might be kind of creepy, right?
No,
like,
but I'm
creepy enough
fur,
as
yeah,
it is, just, even with a fake one.
That just doesn't make sense. And all of this when the economy's in the tank, Wendy.
What I think is just amazing about this, I mean, we sort of study these pockets of the economy at the Journal that seem to be quote-unquote recession-proof, though nothing's ever totally recession-proof. But if you look at, you know, just what people are spending in different categories on pets, you'll find that it's pretty close. I mean, where we'll cut back on ourselves, we won't do it on our pets. And, you know, you can argue the logic of this. I mean, should you be paying off your credit card bill before you spend on some of these things for your pet? Yes. But, you know, when it comes to discretionary income, discretionary means discretionary, and if somebody wants to spend it on their animal, you know, they have every right to. Yeah.
Well, Wendy, I want to push back on this just slightly, because I remember a few years ago at the beginning of the recession, even before we sort of had officially called it a recession, I went out and did a story about animal shelters and the fact that more animals were showing up at them because people sort of decided that they wouldn't be able to take care of their pets.
Right.
To take care. Is that something that you're seeing as well, or is that sort of going away?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point to raise. I mean, you know, it's sort of like when people buy a home and they think it's great, I'm going to have this home, but then they got to take care of the house and it's a lot more expensive than they ever thought. It's the same thing with a pet. I mean, people are sort of smitten with the idea of having a pet, but then you bring it in, there's a lot of costs involved. I mean, even if you're not going full out and buying the foam mink coat and the treadmill we were talking about, you know, you've got to feed that animal. If that animal gets diabetes or gets, you know, hit by a car or, you know, just gets an ear infection, you've got to take them to the vet. And, you know, as we looked at today, those particular costs are going up. And so I think what you end up seeing, Steve and Jeremy, is a lot of people are getting rid of pets. And that's an unfortunate situation. You know, and one could argue more people should have their pets spayed and neutered to sort of end
to
that
quote
cycle.
Quote Bob Barker.
Good. You said it before I did.
Wendy, what a nice conversation and fun, too. Wall Street Journal reporter Wendy Bounds from New York. Wendy, thanks so much.
Hey, Steve, Jeremy, have a great day.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
Bye-bye.
The Fox TV show The X Factor has been struggling in the ratings this season. So tonight, producers are launching an experiment with social media in an effort to help attract viewers and hopefully more ad revenue. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
Starting tonight, fans of The X Factor will have more to tweet about than Judge Simon Cowell's hijinks.
Okay, have you ever performed in public before?
Now, viewers may be able to vote for contestants on the show using direct Twitter messages.
This is just the next step.
Carl Howe of market research firm Yankee Group says this type of interactivity was pioneered by another show that featured Simon Cowell, American Idol. That show allows viewers to call, text, and vote online.
Making it interactive is a way to really bind the viewer to the show.
And with Twitter, potentially connect them with marketers. Twitter forces users to keep their thoughts short and to the point, and Howe says that makes it easy for advertisers to target users. And it may be gold for Fox. Barry Liebert is the author of Social Nation.
Because if they're capturing my Twitter handle, they'll be able to contact me and see if I want to engage in other shows that they may be running.
And 13 million viewers, that's something to tweet about. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And finally today, Jeremy, a woman in Berlin, she went to the butcher, which is a big deal in Europe. If you've ever been to Germany, there are butchers like
butchers
on every street
everywhere.
Corner.
They're like
everywhere.
Starbucks over there.
Yeah. She went there to pick up a bag she pre-ordered of cold cuts and veal steaks. Instead, I'm surprised she didn't have any worst in there, but instead she got a bag filled with 2,000 euros or
wow.
about 2,800 bucks. Apparently,
that's a pretty good surprise.
That's a very nice surprise, right? Yeah. You think, oh my God, I got this big bag of cash. Apparently the bags look similar and an employee gave her the wrong one. They were sitting next to the cash register.
Lucky her.
Yeah. The woman said she was flabbergasted by the mistake. She couldn't believe that this happened. And when she finally informed the butcher of the error, They gave her a 100 euro reward and a basket of sausages.
Basket of sausages. That's all he gives her? 100 euros and a basket of sausages?
I mean,
he was saved 2,000 euros.
2,000 euros.
And all he gives is 100.
I know. But she just wanted her cold cuts. So, I mean, she got those, right? And she got the basket. I mean, she's not doing that
she's
badly.
She's
got to
get
right?
her priorities yeah, straight,
I
that
I
woman.
I know.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday. And thanks for checking out the Marketplace Midday Update at marketplace.org.
And of course, remember that you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Hobson.
I'm at Radio Chio.
This is APM, American Public Media.